It is Sunday sessions time, a brand new NRL.com podcast. I'm your host, Chris Kennedy, joined in the NRL.com studios by Roosters, Souths and Blues legend Craig Wing. Wingy, how are you going?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Very, very well. Keen to talk some footy. We finally got some footy to talk about. A huge round one in the can. Going to wind backwards through the eight games. Kick off with the Titans and the Raiders, which we've only just seen the end of very recently. Not too many major talking points out of this one. The Raiders far too good up on a very damp Gold Coast. A huge loss for the Titans, losing both their halves, Ash Taylor out in the pregame and then Tyron Roberts pretty early on. Were they just pretty much up against it from the start?
Yeah, they would have been up against it from the start, most definitely. I think from the parts that I saw of the game, I saw the Raiders really seemed like they knew what they wanted to do. It was all about intent. It was all about enthusiasm. And they were just rolling forward. I think I like the way they went for the field goal towards the back end of the game there. Obviously, they've got some things in their mind about their ability to close out games. So no wonder Ricky Stewart had a half smile on his face at the back end of the game.
Pretend it's 18 all, lads. Yeah, their forwards are really good in that one. C.S. Oliola, Josh Papali, the new English recruit, John Bateman, he was really impressive, plenty of mongrel in him. And young Corey Horsburgh off the bench, I was very impressed with, the young Queenslander as well, the fiery redhead, got stuck into it. If you were Garth Brennan, would you be panic stations this early, given that, you know, playing without your halves?
I would be certainly very, very worried as to what I'm going to do next, and I'd really be sweating on those guys, making sure that they're taking care of themselves to get back into the game. But look, that's a tough one. You spend all the off season running your plays around a couple of particular guys, and if they're not there, it really makes things very difficult. There's always things to focus on in terms of the other players, their effort areas, your defensive structures and everything, but ultimately, if you're not winning games early on, it puts the pressure on your shoulders very, very quickly.
Yeah, I spoke to Ryan James with the preseason. He was actually a huge rap on Riley Jacks and the impact that he'd had around the squad in his time up there. So if either of Tyron Roberts or Ash Taylor isn't right next week, you'd have to think he comes into the mix. For the Raiders, they were 0-4 to start last year, lost a number of close games. Must be a big confidence booster for them.
Yeah, definitely, and particularly given the way that they finished off the back end of the year last year. They beat some of the top teams going into the finals there, and then they had to bow out. So, you know, I think they would be going into this year thinking, look, let's just show people the team that we can be, and let's really get the job done. And I think they'd be pretty proud with that performance today.
Before that, we saw the Penrith Panthers take on the Parramatta Eels out at Panther Stadium. Eels too good in the end. They were out 14-0, lost Michael Jennings to a sin bin, and got it back to 14-12, and they would have had their hearts in their mouths thinking about what happened in round one last year, but managed to kick on at the end and score the final try and close it out. Very, very young spine. What are your sort of takeouts from this one?
Well, I think you give some young blokes some enthusiasm, particularly with a game like that, where I think most people would have expected the Panthers to do a number on them. I think they'll get a lot of confidence out of that. Young kids with a lot of confidence, they can do anything. They've got the Bulldogs next week. They could probably go on a little bit of a roll very early on until they face the Roosters. But look, very, very encouraging signs, and great to see a young debutant in Dylan Brown have a great start to it. But on the Panthers' side of things, quite disappointing, you'd have to say. I think they've got a pretty stacked team. They would have had, apart from the turmoil, which they should probably be used to by now, they probably would have had a good off season with the coach that they always wanted. Bit of a disappointing result for today, I think.
Yeah, I think both teams lost a couple of key players. Parramatta, particular with Junior Paulo, they would have been looking for him to make a statement. And Penrith lost Viliami Kikau from their pack, and Sione Katoa, their hooker, a couple of days out. So that probably sort of squared the ledger in that sense. But Penrith, you'd think they would have been up for this one, but just so many errors, they didn't give themselves too much of a chance.
Yeah, exactly. And whether that was a bit of a complacency with the opposition, but being out enthused by, some would say, a lesser pack, would probably be a good shot in the arm for the Panthers, and I'm sure we'll see them bounce back next week.
What are the implications here for Parramatta? They were 0-6 to start last year. They didn't win a single away game the whole year. They've kicked off 2019 with a pretty impressive win away from home. Just a huge monkey to get off the back, especially with so much inexperience in the playmaking positions.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, as we touched on before, young guys with a bit of confidence, and that team has needed a break for some time now. I think there'll be a bit of a buzz around the area, not just throughout the team, but throughout the community as well. And I think it's always a good thing.
I don't know if you've seen too much of Dylan Brown yet, but for an 18-year-old to come in, just to have so much composure around what he's doing, no panic at all, putting in long kicks when he needs to put in long kicks, not afraid to run the ball, not afraid to throw himself into his defence, he's a prospect.
Yeah, definitely. I think that game would have done him the world of good, and you'll see his game start to evolve from here.
We're not making any bold calls on who's going to make and not make the eight after round one, but a lot of people riding off the Eels just through that inexperience in the spine. Would you say having, Mitch Moses at whatever he is, 25, 26, is the old man of the spine now? You've got a 18-year-old at 5'8" and a 20-year-old at hooker. Is that something that's going to hold them back as the year goes on, or do you think the enthusiasm can carry them on?
Enthusiasm can carry them so far, but they're going to eventually face some situations where they're under a lot of pressure. And they'll only have so much experience at handling those situations. That's when the rest of the guys in the team really need to come into play, and how well equipped they are to do that, I think we'll have to wait and see. But certainly early on, confidence, a good win under their belt up against a team that probably should have beaten them. They're off to a good start, but...
Couple of injury blows out of that one with Nathan Brown and Hame Sele both looking at a bit of a sit on the sidelines. So a little bit of a dampener for both sides there. Now, the final game of Saturday night, the Cowboys hosting the Dragons. Dragons missing a few names from the forward pack. Cowboys obviously into the post-Thurston era. Started a bit scrappy but ended up kicking on Michael Morgan's team now. What did you make of him?
I thought Morgan and... Tamari Martin was, I thought they controlled the team very, very well. They had looked like they had really good shape, really good structure. Everyone knew their roles. They played good attacking football, and their forwards just steamrolled them straight up the middle, doing the job right. Jason Taumalolo in the clear, looking like a fullback at 150 kilos or whatever he is. That's a tremendous sight, but... Yeah, I think the Cowboys, they were just too good.
That try that he set up for Tamari Martin, how is it possible for a man that big to be that light on his feet?
It's incredible. He is such an athlete. Off the mark, he's fast. Yeah. He can step on a dime, offload, palm, both hands. Is that the way of the future? In 10 years' time, is that going to be the prerequisite? Is our front row forwards going to have the same skill as halfbacks? Not beyond the realms of possibility.
It takes a freak athlete to do it. But, I mean, what do you make of their forward pack? Because they originally named Josh Maguire on the bench. They brought him into the starting side. Started Taumalolo on an edge, and he looked a little bit frustrated, a little bit quiet before he got into the middle. Gavin Cooper started on the bench. A few people suggesting that potentially Cohen Hess should have been the man to go back to the bench. Do you have a solution for them long term, or are you sort of happy with the way they ran it?
Oh, I think... Look, they got the win, so obviously they were doing something right. Jason Taumalolo, the more touches he gets, the more work he does. He's an 80-minute player. He's a workhorse, and he can do it the whole year. So the more involved he is, the better. But his skill set, being a bit fresher out on the edge, if he can nail that, that's frightening what he could possibly do running at halves.
Yeah.
But look, they've got good size. They've got a big forward pack. They've got a lot of skill there. And if you can name Josh Maguire on your bench, I know that he started, you've got some talent in your team.
Absolutely. And where to for the Dragons? Obviously, it's only round one. They're going to take some time to, get into the grind of it. They've obviously, without Corbin Sims, who's still suspended, without Jack DeBellin for we're not sure how long, and they're now without Tyson Frizzell for 4 to 6 weeks, who suffered a painful-sounding injury.
Sounded very painful. It didn't look too good either. I think they're going to struggle a little bit with their go forward, and they really do need to find a solution for those four. It's going to be tough to have them all on the field at the same time. What role do they play? If they were going to have all of them in the team, I think one of them at least needs to be 10 kilos heavier and be able to get a bit of a go forward game about them. But I don't think any of them are capable of doing that.
Yeah, so you've got four key playmakers, or I guess five key playmakers if you throw in McInnes as well. And at the moment, they're bringing on Matt Dufty, who's a fullback, yeah. and sort of rearranging their whole team. You know, yeah. Gareth Widdop goes to the halves, Ben Hunt goes to hooker, and McInnes sort of, I think he went to loose forward for a bit before he got interchanged off.
It's, yeah, that's a lot of movement for one interchange.
Yeah.
And particularly once you start to lose a bit of go forward, particularly with those injuries that they've got, makes it difficult to have that many ball players out onto the field.
Mm.
And then again, if they find themselves in a situation where they need to have some go forward and they need one of those players to cart the ball up or get quick play of the balls or take the tough run, it puts them in a bind because they don't have that in front of them. Look, perhaps on a dry track when the team's going forward and you're attacking and things are going your way, those guys out there on the field can be a really big bonus, but I think when you're trying to grind it out playing against teams that are maybe got the wood on you or playing just as good as you are, I think it's going to be tough to find a position for all of them. But that's I think that's one thing that we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the solution is. Paul McGregor said he likes carrying a back on the bench to cover those injuries. But like you said, if you have no injuries in the backs and you lose a couple in the forwards, you suddenly need a, whether it's Cam McInnes or Corey Norman or someone to roll their sleeves up and sort of help out in the pack a bit, then you're leaving yourself a little bit skinny.
Yeah.
Leichhardt Oval, the weather gods do not seem to like Leichhardt Oval because every time I'm watching a game there, it seems to rain. The crowd wouldn't have minded too much at full time, though, because they got the win 20-6 over the Seagulls. I'm not sure how much of this was Tigers good and how much was Manly bad, but it was a pretty good way to start the year for the West Tigers.
Yeah, and good to see the old dogs have a good crack. From what I understand, well, Robbie Farah getting two tries, Benji Marshall pulling the strings as well. They looked really good, and from what I understand, Michael Maguire showed them no leniency all off-season, and it was a tough off-season, and those old frames getting through all the work would have done themselves a world of good and got a lot of confidence out of that and set a really good example for the guys around them. So I think they had the first two runs in the game, didn't they? A couple of double half scoots or something like that. So setting their intentions early, I think, look, they did. I think they handled the conditions better than the Manly Sea Eagles. And the Eagles, they were probably a little bit disappointing and just put the pressure on themselves. Mm. I mean, when you've got Benji Marshall, Robbie Farah, Luke Brooks coming at you in your own half, running at will, putting kicks through, you're always going to be under the pump, especially in your own half. But I think the worrying sign for the Seagulls for me was they were finding a lot of holes through the middle.
Mm.
That signifies a few problems for me, defensive attitudes and systems. Fair enough if they get you on the outside and you use this, you know, they get around you with speed or get numbers in an overlap, but coming through the middle, that's something that needs to be fixed up ASAP.
Yeah, they're obviously missing Dylan Walker and Tom Trbojevic from their back line. Trbojevic at least will be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We saw Brendan Elliott hatchet one of the great tries.
Yeah, that was a big one, that one. I mean, theoretically, they could have gone into halftime 8-0, and that's a completely different mindset in those conditions as opposed to what ended up transpiring. So that was a big boo-boo, that one. Trbojevic coming back, certainly wouldn't be rushing him back, but I think they really need him back in terms of what he adds in attack. Not just positionally as a fullback, but the opportunities he creates when there's nothing on, and I think they lacked a bit in attack today.
Well, he's not just a supporting-style fullback. He's very much one of their key playmakers. He gets a lot of linebacker assists, a lot of try assists when he plays, so they really rely on him pretty heavily. What about for the Tigers? Obviously, they did what they did without their captain this year, Moses Embiid, the fullback still to come back in, and Josh Reynolds watched the whole game from the bench as 18th man. Now, he was sort of left out with, you know, we were of the understanding that it was so he could get a full game in reserve grade rather than sort of only getting 10 minutes off the bench in first grade. And he ended up getting pulled from reserve grade to be the 18th man in first grade. So he's not getting any footy at the moment. Do you know, obviously, the combination between Brooks and Marshall's working well. What do you see the future for Josh Reynolds? Can he get back into this team? Is he just waiting for an injury? What happens?
It's a long season. And for those guys at this age, perhaps the less footy he plays now, the more he's going to play at the back end of the year. I certainly wouldn't be fretting if I was him. It's a bit of a tough break not starting the season, but look, you just have to bide your time.
Yep.
There's not much you can do about that. Obviously, you want the team to be winning, but there's a few guys there running on old legs, and they are going to need a break eventually. And provided they've got him as a backup, anything can happen, really.
Have a look at the first Saturday game, and this was a powerful statement from the Warriors. And obviously the Bulldogs probably made it a little bit easier for them than they should have, but that forward pack was just on fire, and a very young half in Adam Kieran had a fantastic debut.
Yeah, I think powerful is an understatement of when those New Zealand Warriors get those Auckland Warriors get their steam up. They are terrifying. It looks like they were bouncing off the back fence when they were hitting the ball up. And that's what you want from that team. The question is, can they do that week in, week out? That's an attitude thing.
Mm.
And I'm sure that's something to, they're working on. But Adam Kieran, what a debut, hey?
Yeah, fantastic.
What a fantastic debut. So happy to see young guys like that get a start and really really make a fist of it. And I thought Blake Green really steered them around the park very, very well. So hats off to him. He was... He's the guy that they need to give them structure.
Yeah.
All of those guys in that team, they can play hot potato football, but as we saw in this game, they're best when they're running hard and playing hot potato football occasionally. And for them to be able to do that, they need someone like Blake Green giving them a structure on the field and steering them around the park. A little bit disappointed with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lachlan Lewis and Kieran Foran... they need to work out who is going to make the plays that are going to create some indecision in the opposition defence and put them under pressure, put them into two minds. Lachlan Lewis, great start to the year last year, steering the team around the field, but...
No pressure on him back then, it's a different
no
story.
No pressure on him back then, and my only criticism, and I always thought the next evolution for him, and I was hoping he would probably work on it in the off-season, was he needs to play the ball at the line a little bit more. I get the feeling he plays it a little bit too early, which if you're a defender, you just wait to see what he does and you tackle the person that he passes the ball to. He's not creating any indecision in the defensive line. I thought Kieran Foran, that's probably his role, or I thought he would take the lead on that, but unfortunately it wasn't their game.
What do you make of, you know, Lewis's style? He's got this weird, you know, kick where he sort of, everything stops around him, where he sort of holds the ball and he's got this really slow ball drop and then he launches it. Is it just a matter of time before this gets figured out? Because he was making a lot, he made a lot of metres on Saturday and he was getting a lot of metres from it last year.
That was something that was highlighted last year. You know, I'm sure teams will do some study on that. But... he's been effective so far. It more so depends on how his attacking runners react around it. Are they onside? Do they end up overrunning the ball? If that's not an issue and he's getting the ball away, then fair enough. But the other side of the equation is generally you want a half that's kicking the ball to be attacking the line, somewhat similar to the way a Cooper Cronk does, so that everyone's running, everyone's on the front foot. It's quite an interesting one. I guess we'll just have to wait to see how it progresses through the year.
Yeah, we haven't really seen those two taking the ball deep into the line in their one game this year. The other thing with the Bulldogs, when their team was announced on Tuesday, the criticism from Bulldogs fans at the time was, you know, there's no Reece Martin there after the year that he had last year. And they've bought Nick Meaney to be fullback, and he's in reserve grade, and they've kept Hopper at fullback, and they've played... Carrot Holland was very good at the second half of last year in the centres, but brought in Marcelo Montoya as a centre, the argument being... play Meaney at fullback, Hopper in the centres, and take Montoya out. Now, if you look at, I'd start with Will Hoppawattie, he's very much the ball carrying fullback, and Nick Meaney's come down as a bit more of the all rounder. Is this just a case of, do you think Dean Pay playing it safe, or is it going to be sooner than later that we might see Meaney injected to add a bit more sort of strike into the back five?
Yeah, it's strange that one, bringing those guys on board, but not giving him a start. Maybe he didn't see what he was expecting or what he liked in the preseason.
Yep.
I'm sure he has his reasons for it, but given their performance yesterday, he's going to have to make some changes either way.
Well, let's talk about Friday night, because you and I were both out there at a very damp SCG, and I was cozy up in the media box. I think you were out in the elements a little bit more than I was.
The rain in my eyes.
through the driving rain in your eyes, what did you make of this game? Because I thought it was an enthralling contest. There was no shortage of spirit, of aggression, of spite. You've played for both these clubs. What did you make of it?
I thought it was a good game. Yeah. I thought it was a good game. It was It was actually, from experience, it was a lot wetter out there than it looked on TV. I thought, look, they both made wet weather footy mistakes, ball bobbling around. But I kind of felt like the Roosters just didn't get their game on. They were pushing passes, playing the wrong style of footy in that kind of conditions. And I think the Rabbitohs controlled the ball a little bit better. They still moved the ball around, but their execution was a little bit better. I thought it was good. I thought I really liked hearing what Wayne Bennett said after the game, where he's not trying to impose a game plan on them. He's just trying to present a game plan that puts their talented, naturally gifted attacking athletes in the right position so that they can make the decisions and let the game flow on from there. And you saw Trent Robinson actually recognise that and say that they were far more unpredictable this year than they were at the back end of last year. So I think that really works. And look, there's probably no better team that can go from structured footy to unstructured footy than the South Sydney Rabbitohs. They've got the structure up their sleeve that they learnt last year with Seabowl, and now they're really trying to make the most of the unstructured. So look, I think it was a wet weather footy game, and the Rabbitohs just handled it a bit better.
Is there a better wet weather footy kicker going around than Adam Reynolds?
Absolutely not. And he was the difference between the two teams. Mm. His fifth tackle options, his kicks, and they weren't easy kicks too. Every single kick was under pressure, but he can just put the ball on a dime. And once you're pressuring an opposition in their half with this in those kinds of conditions, you're just under the pump the whole time.
Now, two tries scored by grubber kicks stabbed into the uprights. That's not an accident.
No, not at all. He's definitely going for them. You can see the way and where they're trying to get to on the field to position, so he has a shot at them. Simply by kicking the ball at the upright, is it going to hit, isn't going to hit? It's really difficult for the half that's sweeping around to work out where to cover. It's really difficult for the fullback coming around to work out where to cover. If it ricochets off the side, then usually the front rowers, who are all the forwards that are around the ball, they're not ready because they're looking up, trying to make sure that they're covering him just in case it runs. It really creates, well, if it's 50-50 when the ball goes in the air or on the ground, when they kick it into the post, I think the advantage goes to the attacking team.
Absolutely. And that second one that Cody Walker scored, I swear he was running. He wasn't chasing the line of the ball. He was chasing where the ball was going to end up after it bounced off the post.
Yeah, and I think they would have practiced that kind of thing. And it's happened on so many occasions, and they've all played together for so long. So, look, I think they really have a read for where the ball's going to go, what he's trying to do, and they're trying to cover all bases.
Roosters started a little bit slow last year, and they picked up steam really from about round eight. Trent Robinson won't be too concerned just yet.
Absolutely not. I was probably expecting a little bit more out of the Roosters, particularly given that they didn't really hit their straps until right at the end of last year. Would have a great off-season. Two trips overseas, which not many teams get to do, which was pretty cool. I had a great World Club Challenge. I was expecting a bit more out of them, but in saying that, wet weather footy, early days, I think Trent Robinson would probably prefer to have a slow start to the season, knowing that it's a long year ahead and they're going to have their backs against the wall because every team's going to be aiming up against them all year, being the defending premiers. So I think the slower the start, probably the better for the Roosters.
What did you make of all the spite? We saw Cody Walker really trying to get under Cooper Cronk's skin, and Latrell was getting baited.
I really love the rivalry. I really love the banter. I really love the physicality. I do not love the niggle after the fact. So after someone scores a try, Latrell Mitchell trying to shove someone, Cody Walker, like a late push, all that kind of stuff. I think that's crap.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that? Yeah, I don't really like that side of things, particularly for Latrell. He's such a big, intimidating guy as it is. And when he's aggressive on the field, there's nothing better. But I think him being getting distracted with that kind of stuff and trying to be a bit of a brawler as opposed to being just physical on the field shows a little bit of inexperience on his behalf. But rest assured, I'm sure that Trent Robinson, Craig Fitzgibbon and all the Roosters and the senior guys would be saying, look, you don't need to do that because you are intimidating enough as it is. And if you're just focused on the game, that's more than enough.
He admitted as much in the sheds that he did get baited a bit and did get put off his game a bit, and he realises that he needs to just focus on his own game and not get dragged into that stuff quite so much. The earlier game on the Friday was a real arm wrestle right until the end of the game. The Knights prevailing at home against the Sharks, who didn't really cash in on the wind at their backs in the first half. Knights got there in the end. I wouldn't say they're, you know, really, they didn't blow anyone away. They, you know, they got a lot of improvement left in them, but I guess their defence and the impact of guys like David Clemmer and James Gavitt into that team is the encouraging thing.
Yeah, particularly David Clemmer. He went out there and did exactly what the club bought him to do. He worked really, really hard, 30-plus tackles. How many yards did he, metres did he make?
Over 200
metres. He was, that's exactly what they needed. Intimidating front rower, working hard. Hats off to him. I actually watched Caelan Ponga at six. Mm. I think he's got a lot of potential at six, but I think for his style of play, he's really handcuffed playing on one side of the field. He played predominantly left side, and they were attacking from the middle. What happens then is that it really limits the amount of space that he has to work with. And being a fullback, he's probably not used to organising players around him. I saw him following the ball a lot, quite similar to the way a fullback would do, which was sort of detracting from his ability to organise players around him. And when he was getting the ball, he was easy to mark up against. His field was his room to move was really shortened up. I'd really like to see he and Mitchell Pearce on the one side with a longer shift to play with, and runners running hard, dedicated lines off him. If he's not going to organise those players around him, they need to be organised in a preset kind of way to give him room to move. Otherwise, unfortunately, I think he's probably wasted just playing on a shortened attacking side.
Yeah, I think the Knights will benefit a bit more from him and Pearce combining on both sides of the field, because at the moment you sort of got Pearce showing a willingness to come around to the left, but Pong has sort of pigeonholed himself into that left side and he's not venturing out of it too much. What about for the Sharks? Obviously, their first game with Sean Johnson. Matt Moylan looking at home in the one. They're probably going to take a little bit of time with that sort of new playmaking roster to come together, though.
Yeah, that's going to take some time. Work out whose role is what on the field. I think particularly Sean Johnson and Chad Townsend working together. Chad's obviously got to take that really dominant, directional type role, and Sean's got to work. He's got to try and work in with Matty Moylan and get a bit of a combination happening there on the players when they see opportunities on. I like Matty Moylan at the back. I think that's probably his best position. He's a natural runner of the ball. He naturally knows where to go, attack on both sides. So I think that's a win. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time for Sean Johnson to find his feet.
And we'll finish off with Thursday night, if you can cast your mind all the way back to the start of the round. Seems like a lifetime ago already, but the Storm just have a habit of starting the season like this, don't they?
Wow, what a cracking game. You could be forgiven for thinking that the Storm only lost the grand final last weekend at the Sydney Roosters, because they just came out and played like a team possessed. Very, very impressive for a round one team. They were very, very well drilled. They knew where they were going. Their enthusiasm, their effort levels were there. Promising signs for the Broncos, though, in their ability to only go in at half time 10-0 down, and I think they only had 30% of the ball. It was all Melbourne Storm, particularly in the first half, but they managed to fight their way back into the game. And promising signs looking at Cody Nikorima running the ball with numbers around him. I think they'll have a few good shapes to attack with coming this year, particularly with Seabold. I'm sure he would have really thought long and hard as to how he can get the best attacking football and the best attacking structures out of these two halves. One disappointing point for me was their lack of setup on the fifth tackle. Their fifth tackle options and their kicks were really underwhelming. I think that was probably one of the big differences between the two teams. Munster was very, very good. And Melbourne were just having the Broncos coming off their trial line, as opposed to the Storm just having much better field positioning, finishing their kicks and really controlling the game. So for my mind, that's one thing that they really need to work on. But look, Broncos seem like they've got a pretty stacked team there. They just need to find out how they can control the game a little bit better.
Yeah, I think people are death riding Brisbane after this one and sort of piling into their halves. But I think once they get into the groove of it, once Milford and Nikarima operated pretty well together at the end of last year, I think they'll come good. But just on the Storm before we finish up, lost Cooper Cronk 2 years ago. Then going to this year, they've lost the great Billy Slater from fullback.
Yeah.
Finally settled on Scott Drinkwater at the back and then lose him to a pec tear right at the end of preseason. And then Jerome Hughes comes in and does that.
And he did a great job too, didn't he? I mean, I think the key for him and for the Melbourne Storm team is not to expect anyone to play like Billy Slater.
Yeah.
He's irreplaceable. But I think the mentality there is for whoever fills that position, they want to see Billy Slater's enthusiasm, they want to see Billy Slater's effort levels, and that's just an attitude thing. And I think Jerome Hughes, he really filled the hole really, really well.
Yeah.
He was very, very involved, he played a good game, he had really good intent, really good enthusiasm. I'm sure his talk was really good at the back there, so... Wow, they just keep churning them out, don't they?
People seem to like writing them off every year for whatever reason, and they just find another player to fill the gap and find another reason to keep winning.
I think the big thing at Melbourne Storm is that whatever grade they're in, they're all very, very clear as to what's required in each particular position. There's a certain level of non-negotiables to get into the team, and then anything over and above that is what makes you a better player. So I think that's why you see the guys coming through the ranks in the Melbourne Storm. They're able to fill a position and they play a very similar style to the person that they're replacing.
Mm.
So that's good cultivation of talent at the Melbourne Storm.
Very little disruption, sort of, no matter how many changes they have. Mate, that was fantastic stuff. Great job on our first ever Sunday Sessions podcast here from a sultry NRL.com studio on Sunday evening. Look forward to chatting some more footy with you this time next week.
Cheers. See you then.